Founded in 1991 by patients, the FSHD Society is the largest grassroots network of FSHD patients, their families, and research activists. The FSHD Society offers a community of support, news, and information for the millions of people affected by FSHD worldwide. This is FSHD Society Radio. Welcome, one and all, to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. I'm your host, guest, so to speak, sometimes, because sometimes my guests ask me questions, too, and maybe that'll happen today. But I'm Tim Hollenbach, bringing you yet another show, and we're really excited for the guests waiting in the wings. But before we get too far down the road, we want to make sure we celebrate a little bit of our sponsorships, who always help us out in not only just this show, but other things within our FSHD community. We thank Perkin Elmer and Fulcrum. I know Fulcrum also, too, was a huge sponsor for that Orlando event that we had back in June. So we thank them for that and all the efforts that Perkin Elmer bring to us as well, including this show. Also, a little special thank you as we're getting closer into the walk and roll season here to Optum, who is the main sponsor of that event. So find a walk and roll event near you. You can go to fshdsociety.org for information about that, along with other happenings, which we'll talk about later in this episode. And speaking of episodes, if you're looking for past episodes, you can find them on YouTube if you want to watch in, or anywhere you find your podcast. Just go ahead and search FSHD Society Radio Show. I personally use Spotify, but what I hear, we're pretty much everywhere you want to find us. So spread the news. You can always use more listeners. That leads us to the great guest we have on for today. This is an actress, Madison Ferris, is with us today. And some might know her, others maybe this is the first time meeting her. So, but we welcome her aboard today. Well, hey, Madison, how you doing?
I'm great. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. You bet. This always excites me because, one, yeah, I love having musicians on and people that are, you know, in the world of acting, because those are two things that I really like and then get entertained by, and I can't do either one. So I'm always admired by people that can do it and then do it as a profession. So you got me a little bit, you know, starstruckish, so to speak. So I'm always excited to talk to people in those worlds. So thanks for being here.
I would argue that I think music is way harder than acting. I tried playing the bass 2 days ago. My friend is like a bass guitarist, and it took me forever just to get like nine. I don't know. What do you, I don't even know what you call them. Like drums? Chords. Yes. Chords. Yeah. Yeah. And I still don't know if I could do it. But acting, it's like you take a few classes and you go from there.
Oh, well, then, yeah. If that's the case, well, thanks for being here. We'll take it.
Might be diluting it a little bit. Like, I did work very hard. I will say that.
Yeah, I think it probably takes a little more. I mean, than that. I mean, I think we've all had our fair share of watching bad acting in front of us. And I think the majority know the difference, I would assume. I'm not going to name any names of who is bad. I'm just saying, I think we've all witnessed it, and we also know what is really good. So, but you're also an actress that has FSHD, is so many watching right now that have it, or loved ones, caregivers also watch our program and listen in. And one of the things that I thought was very admirable too is that when I was looking more information up about you, that you're the first actress in a wheelchair to play in a leading role on Broadway. Is that accurate?
I mean, that's what they tell me.
That's what they tell you. That's what they tell you too. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, we've obviously had other actors on Broadway who have disabilities, who use wheelchairs, but I think this was the first time it was like a lead role, like a memorable Laura Wingfield, like a lead role character. Yes.
Yeah, that is pretty remarkable. But so you have FSHD. tell us a little bit about that, as in the, I call it like the FSHD story, you know, maybe back when you were first diagnosed, or you know, the time maybe right prior to, you know, a lot of people are interested in that journey or that part of your life.
Yeah. Well, I was a teenager. I think I was actually like quite young. I was like 13 when I was diagnosed. But at first I didn't know what it was. So, you know, it was just simple things like, you know, people knew not to pick me first for kickball. Like people knew, like I wasn't very fast at running. Okay. And that was fine. You know, I still like took dance classes and played softball when I was young. And then, you know, things just started getting harder where I was going up steps. I was taking like one at a time instead of doing, you know, one, two, one. It was like one, two, one, two, you know.
Yeah.
And just leaving class earlier to, you know, get there at the same time as everyone else.
Yeah.
To the next class. And I think they originally diagnosed me as Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I might be mispronouncing that, but I was misdiagnosed. They just said like, oh, you're really flexible. I'm like, yeah, okay. But it was always something like little things here and there that looking back, I was like, oh, obviously. My mom would always like tease me that I never smiled in photos. Mm-hmm. She loved taking photos and I never had this like gigantic toothy grin when I was a kid. So around 13, and it was kind of this like very scary, like none of us really knew what to do diagnosis because we didn't know anything about it. And I think parents take different routes of like my mom being like, you know, you're going to have to go to college locally and stay home. And like,
yeah,
you're not going to be able to do all these things. And my dad going in like the complete opposite direction of like, you can be whatever you want. Like, who cares? And I think both extremes aren't helpful, to be honest. So I stopped walking when I first went to college because I needed to get to classes and carry my books and it just got too exhausting. So I started using a mobility scooter when I first went away to college. And where
did you go to school?
I went to Muhlenberg College in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It's pretty pretty small liberal arts college, but they had a big theater program. And at the time, like I always loved theater. Like I loved doing the school plays. Like that was the most fun thing I got to do, was be in a play every year since I was like 10 years old. And I didn't know if I was gonna study theater. I mean, I knew I wanted to, but I knew realistically, like as a woman with a disability, like it was, you know, acting is already such a gamble.
Already hard. Yeah.
and then not, you know, literally like seeing nobody on screen or on stage with disabilities, it was like I would have panic attacks in college. I mean, not that might be extreme. I had maybe one panic attack where I was like, I'm not gonna get hired to do anything. I'm gonna be so poor. So I double majored too. I studied media and communication. And I just kind of took everything one step at a time. Like, yes, I will study theater because I want to study acting, but I was always like, you know, and then when I graduated college or right before, they do this like showcase in New York where you get to meet some agents and I got one out of that. Wow. And so it was just one thing after another, but always with a pinch of skepticism, like, well, and then, I did move to New York and I started working at like a documentary film company with my media mm-hmm. degree. And I wasn't very helpful there. I'm surprised they kept me there that long. But I did have an agent and I went on like a few auditions and nothing really stuck. And Yeah, I can keep going.
Well, you know, I noticed that, and maybe this is inaccurate information, and please correct me, of course. Were you on an episode of like Law and Order, Special Victim Unit, right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that is one of our main staple programs in this home that I watch with my wife, right? Probably like so many do, because there's like a gazillion episodes.
So many. Yeah.
So like right away, that like jumped out for me because I am a fan of the program and all that. So selfishly, I'm going to ask, do you recall that experience being in that role or in that show?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot of fun. That, talk about a well-oiled machine. Like they've been doing it for so long. So it was just very efficient. It was like the most efficient set I've been on. And also very kind, like the producers and the director and Mariska even bought me like hot wings for lunch. And she bought me a bouquet of flowers. She was really, really sweet. And she said that she saw me play Laura Wingfield on The Glass Menagerie and she loved it. And she just was full of praise for me, which was very surreal. That was a very surreal moment of my life. That was a lot of fun. I remember when I was cast for that and I started telling people like, oh, I'm going to be on an episode of Law and Order. Everyone's like, who are you playing?
Yeah.
Who do you think? The victim. Obviously. I'm going to be abused. Like that person.
Yeah. 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 Right. Right. I mean, that's just that's usually what it's going to be, especially if you're a woman cast in that role, Special Victims Unit. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. So what was that like though, playing the victim?
It was pretty bleak, you know, because the character, I mean, it is a spoiler, but the character is, you know, not only was she attacked, but she has like this horrible, she has like a stroke and paralysis. Yeah, yeah. And it's just like, it's, you know, it was very somber, but in between takes, it would be like Mariska just like cracking jokes and like adjusting the lighting. And it's like, she's on camera and she's like telling people like, hey, do you think we should change this? And it was a lot of fun. Huh. Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
It is. Yeah. Yeah, it was really cool.
Well, I'm going to tell my wife about all that. So yeah, just so you know,
she's a
fan as well. That's great. So you're very welcoming in that role. Was there any other roles or gigs, so to speak, you know, that kind of stand out a little bit, that you could kind of share or talk about, any inside scoop type stories there?
Oh yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of, I mean, after, I'll just say that the Glass Menagerie was probably the best thing I've ever done with my life. And it was really amazing, not just because it was on Broadway and not just because it was with that specific cast, but every moment of it was wonderful because it was the first time I got to really delve into a character for a long period of time and really explore this wonderful play. Like, I love Tennessee Williams, so it was like a dream role for me in a lot of ways, and getting to explore the character in a very different way than most people have known Laura to be. So we decided to make her not exactly a wallflower, but more of a presence in the play, and make her more strong-willed, and her timidness is just really just her shyness is just more being an introvert, but her still knowing like who she is and what she wants out of life. And and it was the most magical experience of my life, and it was very dreamy, and the cast was so supportive. And I mean, it was also very, very scary because they're like taking interviews and being in the limelight is just not something I was very familiar with, even though having a disability, I'm sure most people can relate that you are in the limelight, whether you like it or not. Like when you go out in,
yeah, in yeah, society. You're being noticed, right? Or stared at, or yeah, right?
Yeah,
because you're different, right? Right. Yeah, those are for different reasons why you're in the limelight, so to speak. Now,
yeah.
So what was it like when you're talking about, yeah, I'm glad that you segued to the glass menagerie, because how did that start? Like, put us in your mind when you're going after the role, like were you reading for it? I mean, how did that process work? And was it a little bit even surreal at that point, the farther you went through the process?
Yeah. So my skepticism bleeds into this story as well, because I wasn't in the country when I found out about it. I had actually
So you were in Australia, weren't you?
Yeah, I went to Australia to, I don't know, just find myself or something. It just wasn't, the whole acting wasn't working out. The working at a documentary film company wasn't working out. And I was like, you know, if there was ever a time, this is the time to go live in another country. And I thought I'd be there for 6 months. And I was there for about 5 weeks when my agent at the time was like, hey, do you want to audition for Laura Wingfield? And I don't know how to describe it. It was just like a thunderbolt had struck through me. I was like, I definitely do. And I couldn't have been in a worse position to do it, having no professional experience. Only training and, you know, my studies, being on the other side of the world. It just didn't seem like it was ever going to be a possibility, but it was like, it just clicked where it's like, I have to do this. I don't know how to describe it. It was just like a certainty. And I'm very unsure and very indecisive about most things in my life, but that I was like, I have to do this. And it was so strong that I even debated flying home just to try it out, even though I was dead broke. So I asked if I could do, I'll try and make this story short, because this is a this is a saga of a story, but I had sent in a videotape of me doing about two scenes with two people. One woman was not an actor at all, and she had this very thick Australian accent, which, you know, I'm sending it thinking like, I don't even know if they're even going to look at this. It's Broadway, right? They could have literally anyone they wanted to do this part. And so I sent it, and I remember it wasn't uploading right. I remember the air conditioning wasn't working. I was sweating through my dress. It took me ages to finish it. Yeah. And I just sent it okay, finally, that's over. I can move on with my life, because it's never going to happen.
And you gave it your effort. You figured, that's it. I sent it. It's done.
Yeah.
At least I did it. I'm not going to hear anything from them. Whatever.
Yep. Yeah. Right. And then within a few days, she said the producer saw it. He's in England. He wants you to come in person. And I was like, and I remember having... it was just heart palpitations for the next, because this took place over probably 3 weeks. I booked a flight the next day. And this is a 24-hour flight from Sydney, Australia to New York. And I just booked it the next day. I didn't even tell my dad I left. And I got to New York. I slept on my friend's air mattress at the time for 10 days until the audition was ready.
Wow.
And then I went in. My body was convulsing. I was shaking. I was literally I couldn't, my body was doing things I probably can't even speak about on the microphone right now. It was that bad. And I was just a literal mess. And I remember doing the reading, but blacking out. I don't remember. I had obviously rehearsed for many days in a row, doing literally nothing but sitting on this air mattress going over the lines. And and I got there, and the director's like, okay, I want you to do it, but modern. Oh, so everything.
So all this rehearsing you did, and then he throws in, but do it this way.
Right. Yep. And I was like, So it was like, that's the scary thing about acting is you really don't know what they're looking for. And you have to just give people what they ask in the moment. I remember the casting director was very encouraging. But again, I kind of left the room thinking, I'm glad I did this. It was like so worth it for me to meet Sam Gold, who I really respected as a director, and to read with these great actors. But I'm gonna go home now. I didn't book a one-way ticket. I booked a round trip ticket because I was like, this is just not gonna happen. I'm gonna go say hi to my family and then I'm gonna fly back to Sydney. And then within 2 days, my agent's like, hi, all right, you're gonna go in for another audition, and this time it's going to be with Sally Field. Do you know?
Okay. Who? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I know who that is. Like, and if I thought I had nerves before, well, I did not. I was a mess. My cousin went with me because I was so nervous, and my stomach again was like freaking out, and I was like, Emily, you got to go get me some Pepto-Bismol. Like, I am not going to be in the bathroom when Sally Field walks through those doors. So she did, and Sally was amazing. Like, Sally is like actually the sweetest, nicest, funniest. Like, I have nothing but praise for her, and she made me feel very comfortable. And I did the audition, and I remember wearing a dress, and I went down on the floor for like the gentleman caller scene, and I had to get back up, and they're like, oh, do you want help? And I was like, no, but I think I'm gonna like flash you my underwear. And Sally like jumps up in front of me and blocks the director's view. And she's like, oh, there you go. Like, now no one can see you. And she's like, oh, and what cute underwear they are. Like, it was just a very funny, surreal moment. And I left exhausted, thinking like, I've done literally all I can. I have no more money left to my name. I just said to my cousin, like, if this doesn't happen, like, I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. Wow. Like a make or break moment for me.
You put all your chips in the pile on this one.
Totally. And there were some amazing actresses that were in the waiting room, like that were also auditioning for this part. Some amazing other actresses. So I just the whole time felt like this isn't gonna happen.
But then it did.
Yeah, I got a call from the director that night, and I like bawled, and my cousin just like jumped on top of me. It was the best feeling of my life. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's
and it. Then and then it was all downhill after that, or yeah.
No, yeah. I just had a great time discovering the play and just working with the cast, and I just loved every minute of it. The only thing that I was maybe very uncomfortable with was the interviews, actually, and like being interviewed by like the New York Post or the New York Times and saying something and then like finding out what they posted or what they not that what they posted but what they written was different. It was like a new world for me and very uncomfortable, and Sally was just like very encouraging. She's like, it's okay, like you don't have to ever read anything about you ever again.
Just kind of avoid it. Yeah. It sounds like you got some advice then.
Yeah, totally.
As the process went through, then she become more or less kind of a mentor to some degree.
Yeah. Like she had some very good advice about acting. One of which she said was like, know your colors. So kind of know what you bring in the room before you get there. So like, she's like, there's a flirtatiousness about you. There's like a sassiness, there's an intelligence about you. And you need to know these things before you take on a character, because those will be prevalent when you're acting. So you need to decide like if you want to highlight that or you want to hide those things, but those are what you bring into the room. And that always kind of stuck with me.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah.
She was very encouraging.
It kind of, it's actually an interesting segue too, because I was going to ask a thought, question that popped up when you were talking about, going through the role and like sitting on that air mattress and you were, practicing it and this and that. And as then the process went forward, you got the role. Is there any parts of Madison that's in the character of Laura?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a very hard character for me to play because she was very, she was a woman of few words, and I am clearly not. Mm-hmm. And she was very introverted and shy. And to me, I'm just not. I'm just so, I will talk your ear off. I'll talk to anyone. So that was kind of tricky. And then she also like having this, I think I definitely brought things like my relationship with my mother into the role and my flirtatiousness with the gentleman caller and, wanting to keep peace in the family. I think that's one of Laura's main super objectives is like to keep
the peace.
Two opposing odds together. Kind of similar to Stella in A Streetcar Named Desire. So there's a lot of overlap in Tennessee Williams shows, I think. Yeah. But yeah, I think I definitely brought a lot of like sassiness to the role that I think is very much me. And I loved that. I loved doing that every night.
Yeah. How many times did you perform it on Broadway? Do you know?
I don't know how many times. I know it was 8 shows a week.
Okay.
And I think it was a limited run. It was about 3-4 months. Yeah. March, mm-hmm. April, May. I think about 3 or 4 months.
That 8 shows a week, right?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be, it's a workout. Like it's really like tiring. And the show took really good care of me. They were like, you need a nutritionist. And I'm like, I agree. And I also I only had one day off a week. So I started a plant collection. Like every Monday I would like go to the plant store and buy a new plant. And now that's like a hobby I'm taking with me.
Really? So how many plants do you have now?
I have 20 right now.
20 right now. Okay. Yeah. And they're all alive and well, I assume.
Yeah. My mom was a landscaper. So she, she's kind of like, she's like, move over. You don't know what you're doing. And she's, she's taken over.
Okay. So you bought them, but you have a landscaper on staff.
Exactly. None are dying on our watch.
Now, some might ask, especially those that have, FSHD, because I know you mentioned when you were younger, you weren't getting picked first for the kickball team, and the reason we've all been in that position. And then you also mentioned, softball, playing those things, but then obviously, you don't now. So are there parts of that, the athletic life or those things that maybe you recall doing younger that if you don't do now, is there anything that you miss?
Well, I guess I was never very athletic. I kind of was like, I did dance classes. I do kind of miss that. I did get to revisit that in college, like kind of one of those weird, quirky college dance courses where it's like contact improv. And I actually got to do a few dance pieces in New York City. And people paid me to dance as a woman with a disability, which was wild to me.
Wild.
So, but yeah, I will say like, it definitely, I mean, thankfully I always liked acting and movies when I was a kid. So I didn't have to give that up as my disability progressed. But there are things that I wish. It's kind of funny when you have a disability because I think people assume we think about how different we are all the time, but we don't until something comes across us. It could be as simple as like oh, that cup is at the top of the fridge. And it's like, oh, okay, well, how do I get that cup? And it's like, do I knock it down with a stick, or, you know, do I shake the fridge or something like that? You know, you're not thinking about how different you are all the time, because it's just, that's insanity. It doesn't work that way. But when I'm acting, there are some things where I'm like, man, I wish my muscles didn't get weaker, because I, you know, it would be really funny if I could just do this like one movement to tell the story on camera.
Yeah.
And so I do have moments like that. And obviously it's like a progressive disease, so you know you're going to get weaker over time. And that is definitely scary for me. I think this play that I'm about to do in Massachusetts, at Barrington Stage Company, I'm actually like quite grateful I get to do this part, because the character's mobility is even less than mine.
Okay.
So it's giving me hope that there will be roles in the future that I can do that, you know, as my disability progresses, I can still, you know, take on different roles. And I think writers are more attuned to that as well. Like, we're seeing that more and more slowly, very slowly.
Yeah. It feels like it's taking too much. Yeah. I know there is definitely some pushback from people that, you know, they see an able-bodied actor play the role of someone that isn't, and they're like, wait a minute, there's plenty of actors and actresses out there that could play that role, and that, you know, are already disabled or are dealing with a, you know, if it's MD or MS or whatnot. And it's like, right. You know, how do you feel about that? You know, that it feels like,
maybe
they're being passed over. Maybe they're not being considered. I don't know. Yeah. I'm not a Hollywood insider, but the point is that we're not seeing, you know, people such as yourself in popular roles or continual roles. I think you made a huge push in the positive direction by being on Broadway and the continued work that you're doing. But why do you think it is taking so long to like turn the corner here?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's so many facets to casting, right? There's the producers, there's the director, and then there's the casting agents. And so casting agents first have to know that you're out there. And there are pushes too for casting, like they'll have workshops for actors with disabilities, and they will, you know, I audition all the time. I have a great manager. I audition for roles that aren't specifically saying like this actor has a disability. And I audition for roles that say that they do have a disability. And sometimes I'm not cast in either. Actually, that most of the time, because as the life of an actor, you're not cast all the time or ever. So, but why do I think it's taking a long time? Well, it starts with writers, writers creating a script, and you know, they can specifically say they have disabilities, but you know, you got to wonder, like, do these writers know people with disabilities? Do these writers understand, like, you can write characters that, you know, don't specifically say like this character is this specific race, this character is this specific gender, this character is this specific disability. I mean, and then producers too, like, are their bottom line is like funding and money. So it's like, I mean, the whole process really isn't fair for any actor. I'll just say that. I once bumped into Jake Gyllenhaal. And when I say bumped into, I'll say I chased him down the street. And he literally, like, he talked to me for like 10 minutes. He asked if I, you know, he's like, oh, he found out that I was an actor. And he was like, well, welcome to a shitty business. And he walked away. And it's like, that was his parting words to me. I'm like, so I think, like, I don't know if I can specifically pinpoint one problem as to why we're not seeing as many actors with disabilities. I think I think it's because, like, I think casting is definitely more aware of these people and they are putting us in the room. But it just comes down to like who's best for the part. And hopefully,
but I mean, it just sounds like, I mean, it's what you're saying is, you know, it is a tough business regardless.
Yeah.
This just doesn't make it any easier. And thank you, Jake, for giving us a great rosy picture of acting, right? Wow. But I'd imagine it is tough. I mean, from a fan, we all look and see the final result, but like a lot of things, just like if you're watching, I always say like the Olympics, you know, and I tell the kids I coach all the time, I'm like, okay, you're watching that great Olympian on television. You're watching the final product. You're not watching all the things that went in their whole career. So to you, it's like, wow, they came out of nowhere and they're doing this amazing thing, but it's taken years, if not, you know, on top of years to get there, and all the no's and the people rejecting you and the people that didn't believe and overcoming all that, including your own self-doubt. And then, you know, you make Broadway and then moving on forward even into, you know, more roles, and the door opens a little more for each role, I'd imagine, that you take on. It builds more confidence in you and kind of, you know, broadens your palette and so forth. So, tell us about then this new role, if you can, or as much as you can, because it's coming up fast. You said in Massachusetts, you said the Barrington Stage Company. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So like you said, I mean, once you have like one good show under your belt, these things start building. So I know I was cast in a Amazon original series called Panic, and the main producer was like, I saw you on the Glass Menagerie and I loved seeing you. You made me cry, like you made me laugh. And so I am forever grateful for that part because it led me to other great artists, other great creative people in the industry. Right. And it led me to this part now, which is at Barrington Stage Company. And the play is called All of Me. And I found out about it the year I did the Glass Menagerie. So I've been attached to this play since 2017. Wow. And that is another aspect of the industry. It takes so long to get a show up on its feet. And this is a brand new play. And the writer, she approached me, she said, I really want to write about a character who has a disability. And she specifically wrote about a character who lost her voice. So this character was a jazz singer and she lost her voice. And she uses I always forget what it's called, speech talk technology.
I know what you're talking about. Yes.
And she said, I just want to know, I haven't seen anything like this on stage. And she was very invested in doing a lot of research and asking a lot of disabled artists, like what were their thoughts on this play? And she's been developing it and rewriting it since for as long as I've known her. And I kind of came in and did a reading, and then the next year I did another reading, and the next year I did another reading, and she's been submitting this play to competitions. And then this play won the Barrington Stage playwriting competition. And so the reward is that they produce it on stage.
They produce it. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And the director is she was my assistant director on the Glass Menagerie. So it's just nothing but connections there.
There's a connection. That's nice. Yeah. So what excites you then about this next project?
I'm so glad you asked. Okay. So this play is hilarious. I'm just going to start off by saying that this is the funniest play I have read in a very long time. That being said, it is, I don't want to give away too much, but
yeah, right.
My character, like I said, she has muscular dystrophy. She uses this technology to communicate with the world around her, and she meets a guy And he also uses this technology, but he is extremely wealthy and she is not. And so this play really delves into disability, but through the lens of like classism and what is the difference between having a disability when you're rich? What is the difference between having a disability when you're poor? And how two people with disabilities fall in love and what the world around them thinks about that and the commentary around that. So it's a very interesting play that I've never seen before on stage, but it's also one of the funniest things that you'll see.
Yeah, because those are like some like serious and could be heavy type topics when you're talking about classism and disability, and then, you know, finding love within that and how does the world see that, and that it's funny.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what's so great about it, is it really feels like something that would happen in my own home. You know, whenever you see characters with disabilities, like they're victims or they're just points to move the plot forward. They're not the focal point of the story. And this very much is the opposite. This is like my character is on stage almost the entire time.
And
she's hilarious and she's really smart. And she has this family that is just driving her nuts, but she really loves. And I think I really want people to see this play. I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm.
It sounds very good, to be honest with you. I was glad actually it is a comedy or funny, because you know, everybody needs a good laugh. And for honestly, the points that you talked about there, you touched on it, where, you know, someone that is playing a role on the big screen or small or on the stage, it's like when they have a disability, it's, you're right, they're the victim. Or we even talked about it earlier, you know, with SVU, you know.
Yeah.
And granted, that is the purpose of that show. I get it. But but it always seems to kind of go that way. Like, we should feel, of course, we should feel empathy, but it's like to the point where I think we're missing, like, well, they also have a funny sense of humor. I mean, these are still people. Just because they have a disability doesn't mean that they are, that it's impossible for them to make jokes or, you know, those kinds of things. So it's like, the focus, I think, has to be on other aspects of a personality of a person, regardless of what the disability is. So the fact that this sounds like this play is kind of going that direction, it's kind of a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And I think it just makes sense too. Like, anyone who's had any type of struggle through their lives are usually very well-rounded, like funny, smart people, because they've had to adapt their lives according to whatever sort of struggle they've been going through.
Yeah.
It's a type of intelligence, really.
It is. And I think those that have, well, in particular, because I've met a lot of people with FSHD, such as myself, but you find out that we're master adapters, and not just in the physical sense, but even emotionally, you know, to kind of roll with it from one day to the next. Because I mean, I've heard stories of people say, well, one day I could stand up and get up out of bed, next day not so much. how do you pivot with that and still keep some type of attitude in a positive direction, to still keep getting up, to still keep efforting and trying and so forth, you know. And with your choice of career, you're following your talent, which to me is always admirable. And I think a lot of people don't do that. They follow the safe way. They follow the way that, you know, well, everybody's doing this, I think I'll just do this. But I'll do that on the side because it's a fun hobby. Where you're like, no, I really like and love acting, and I'm going to do that. And I know it was tough at times in the beginning. According to the bio, you're homeless. You were having problems with, you know, paying rent in New York. That's why, you know, it's not like part of the, like, you're like, no, you know, I'm getting out of here. And then look what happened. The pivot happened. And you're coming back to go to Broadway, and that's opened the doors to other things. Would you think though that a lot of that is because, like, you almost didn't take no for an answer? Kind of what this disease tells us, like, you can't stop. You don't take no for an answer. Do it anyway.
Yeah. My grandmother just passed away, and I wrote a eulogy, and I said, you know, she was a very stubborn, hard-headed woman which I can see a lot in my family and myself included. And I think it was, it's just kind of like, well, this is what I want to do. So it's what, so I'm going to do it kind of like mentality. Yeah. Not saying that like, there aren't many nights where I'm like, God, I wish I had other interests. Like, it's really hard to do. I mean, but I would say that like most people with FSHD, like whatever their interests are, like I'm sure there's many days where it's just like, oh, for crying out loud, like, God, like I wish this was easier. And I do, I feel that way a lot of the times. There's, you know, there's like any actor, there's many days, months where I'm not working and it's just maddening. And, but I guess at the end of the day, it's like, we're all going to die. I want to do what I want to do. And I've always wanted to be an actor. I think like that I had like a second grade teacher say, you should be an actor. Like, I mean, I think it's all, I think it's adapted over the years, like why I act. And now it's just like, now I'm being kind of petulant about it. It's like, no, I want to be on the screen, and they will cast people with disabilities. Like I'm getting like angry about it now.
Good for you.
Yeah. There's different elements to it, but, it's like, what else am I going to do? Like, I'm not good at
satisfied with something else. You're just not, you know, so it kind of, it's your passion. You're good at it. Why the heck can't you do it for a living? Like, I'm not going to be happy if I don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to, I guess, go the safe route, but yet be unhappy? Or do you want to go with the high risk and high reward?
Yeah.
And just follow your passion more. And I think less people do that. And I wish people would follow their passion a little more. You know, whatever that is, it can be something simple, you know, of course, but find that niche, find that thing that like just lights you up.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So last question for you is, and I like asking this because, you know, especially for someone with your experience, and we've talked about you dealing with adversity and keep pushing through, is, you know, someone maybe listening or watching this or recently diagnosed. You know, maybe they thought their life was going to be going this way, and now it's going to go a different direction than they anticipated. Not necessarily bad, but maybe they think it is, at least in this moment. What advice do you have for someone that's kind of early in their diagnosis journey with FSHD?
Well, I don't know if this is necessarily right, but this is what I did. I mean, I was diagnosed at such a pivotal moment in time, like your early teenage years. And so you're not exactly sure what you want to do as a teenager with your life. Mm-hmm. But I think like it's obviously going to be an element that you're going to have to consider with all things like transportation, housing. But it's just one thing in your life. It's not your whole life. It's not your whole identity. And when I was younger, I kind of like, I mean, this isn't great either, but I kind of ignored my disability for as long as possible, and just did what I wanted to do for as long as I could do it. And I think it's helpful to focus in the now, like, all right, I'm going to be on the softball team and I'm going to be shitty and I'm going to be bad at it, but I'm going to do it for as long as I can. And I did that with, you know, dance classes. Like, I'm going to take jazz, tap, ballet until I'm just like literally falling on the floor every few minutes and I can't do it anymore. And it's heartbreaking. Like, it really is heartbreaking to give up things that you love doing, but there's always something else that you can do for fun. There's always like other goals that you can have. And I think I don't know if this is advice, but I would just say like, focus on the things that you do love to do and just keep doing them. And your disability is just like another factor on top of your life.
Yeah. No, that is good advice. That's advice. That's good advice. Good advice. That's good advice. I like that advice. Yeah. Especially, you know, because we do have a group and they're called early onset, you know, because it's been kind of a group that of people that have this disease. I don't want to say we're ignored, but a little bit passed over because they are young and they're a smaller percentage, but it's more devastating. So even for you, you can relate to that. You are a younger person. You were diagnosed very young. Yeah. And that group can definitely relate and see how your life has moved forward regardless. And to me, that is massively inspirational. So I'm hoping that this is, you know, also reflected to what those young people are attacking right now or trying to cope with. And that, Madison, you are an example of, okay, I was diagnosed when I was 13, but now I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And I just need to do it. So like, what are you going to do? Yeah. You know, so follow that. And I think that is good advice, exactly what you gave. But lastly, I guess I lied. It's not really a question, but I definitely want you to, as much as you can, plug what's coming up, right? I mean, you did a little bit, but I think people want to know, you know, if they wanted to see this upcoming play, where can they find that? When does it start?
Yes.
All that great information.
Yes. Okay. So it is going to be in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, with the Barrington Stage Company. It's about a 500 seat theater and I want it filled, people. I want you all coming out and filling up those seats, because if this is successful, we hope to bring it to other parts of the country. So it's in the Berkshires. I think opening night is September 21st and it closes October 9th. And you can find all the information on Barrington Stage Company website. I believe the FSHD Society is hoping to do a specific night, like with a talk back with me and the director and the writer to talk about the show and talk about, yeah, how we got started with it and the choices we made. So I would highly encourage people to come to that one. And I think they're still settling on a date.
To be determined, but it's coming.
It is coming. And I think that's all the information you need. Place, okay. Location. I think it'll be performing every day except Monday and Tuesday.
Okay. And those that want to follow your career further, are you on the social media platforms? They can go ahead and find you and and how this is growing and the next roles and continue and follow your career would be great, right?
Yeah. I have an Instagram that I keep relatively updated. My friend's like, you need to promote yourself more. I'm like, I don't want to. I had a website. I like shut it down. No, but my Instagram is where I like post about work that I'm up to. And
excellent. Well, thanks, Madison, for being here, spending some time with us, inspiring us all. We appreciate you sharing your time and talent with us.
Thank you. I had a great time and I love talking with you. And I am looking forward to doing this play and seeing everyone there.
Sounds excellent.
All right. Well, I'll talk to you later. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Take care, Madison. That's awesome. Thank you much.
Bye.
That is Madison Ferris. She is inspirational. Inspirational indeed. All right. Let's take a break. Play a little bit of a plug from our sponsor. We'll be right back after the break. Today's FSHD Society Radio Show podcast is brought to you by PerkinElmer Genomics. PerkinElmer Genomics, a global leader in genetic and genomic testing, knows that getting a diagnosis matters. That's why PerkinElmer Genomics offers a comprehensive portfolio of test options to answer the complex medical questions that will inform care decisions and provide patients and their families with the best possible outcomes. Using the newest and most innovative technologies coupled with expert genomic interpretation, PerkinElmer Genomics provides diagnostic solutions for a range of conditions, from broad approaches such as whole exome and whole genome sequencing for rare disorders, to target gene testing for neuromuscular disorders, including FSHD type 1 and type 2, and Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. Talk to your healthcare provider about exploring the testing options available through PerkinElmer Genomics, and visit us at PerkinElmerGenomics.com. PerkinElmer Genomics, radically rethinking genomics. Welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. You were just watching a great segment, or listening to, if you found us on the podcast platforms, to Madison Ferris, who spent some time with us. Great talking with her, a lot of energy. She shared some things like her social media out there. Just go ahead and find her. Madison Ferris, looks like it's mad.hatter is the her handle on Instagram. She's got some posts on there. You can follow along with what's going on. She also has a link there for the BarringtonStageCompany.org is the website for the All of Me show. So I'm clicking on it right now. I hope it doesn't play me some weird audio as I click, but it is BarringtonStageCompany.org, and she has the link on her Instagram. And it is pretty remarkable what this story seems to be about, and the fact that it's a little bit of a comedy. I think that is amazing. Also the fact that FSHD Society is going to do what you talked about, kind of a talking with the director, I believe, maybe the writer. I'm not sure if she mentioned that or not, but she'll be part of that conversation that FSHD Society is going to kind of sponsor or be a part of to kind of get the news out. I think there is more push to have people with disabilities that are more than qualified to be in acting roles. I think they're tired as a whole being looked over. And that's at least the impression I get as a fan of movies and plays and shows that, you know, I want to see people of all types throughout the world be in acting roles, especially if they're able to act. I'm not quite sure why that's not happening, but I'm not in the acting world. But I love the fact that Madison is kicking the door in regardless and going for it. So if you want to know how to get out there to this Barrington Stage Company, it says that, there's a lot of information here on when it's going to be put on. Looks like September 21st, yeah, to October 9th. The Boyd Quinson Stage, 30 Union Street in Pittsfield. So please check that out. Support it the best you can. You can buy tickets right here. Everything you need to know about it is right here. So really hope that you can kind of support that program for sure. We're going to take another break. When we come back, we'll kind of go over quick things that are coming up in the FSHD Society world. Hang tight. This is FSHD Society Radio Show. The FSHD Radio Podcast is brought to you by Fulcrum Therapeutics. Fulcrum Therapeutics is a proud sponsor of the FSHD Radio Podcast. The team at Fulcrum is working to develop innovative therapies targeting the root causes of genetic diseases, including FSHD. As the only company with a drug in clinical stage development for FSHD, Fulcrum is proud to support programs that are helping more people learn about FSHD and the critical need for research that can lead to new treatments. For information and updates about Fulcrum, visit their website at fulcrumtx.com. You can also connect with them on LinkedIn or follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Welcome back to the FSHD Society Radio Show. Thanks for being here. This is the episode where we had featured guest Madison Ferris, an actress. She was on Broadway, Glass Menagerie with Sally Field. Talked about that role and how that opened up doors for her, probably at the brink of where she thought, I don't know if this acting thing is going to work. Yeah, she was evicted. She had things were not working out like she thought in New York. She decided to take kind of this, you know, life-changing maybe trip to Australia, and unbeknownst to her, things were in action, right? that happens a lot in our lives. And asked to, you know, go for that role that she eventually got under that play, The Glass Menagerie, with Sally Field. I mean, that's just amazing to me. And her whole life turned around, to be honest with you. So as she played that role of Laura Wingfield in that play, and kind of changed the role quite a bit, and changed how people perceive people, I believe, that could act and yet had a disability. And really proud of her for doing that. And we referenced the early onset group that FSHD Society has. And I think that Madison is a big inspiration for that group, because there's a lot of things there that she offers in insight and perseverance. And it is not easy to overcome. We all know that. We're all doing it every day. And Madison is just a great shining example of how hard work, it does pay off. It does. Persistence, and how we all adapt, it does help in our persistence towards what we want to do, regardless of what seems to be our limitations. So check her out on that. I'm going to double check that SVU episode, by the way. I'm a big fan of that. I do actually recall watching it. And I thought when I was watching it, I was like, wait a minute, I think she has FSHD. And I think I looked her up before we've ever even thought about having her on the show. So I'm going to have to, I'm kind of going back in my memory, but I'm pretty sure I went through those efforts at the time. But it was great to have her on now, as well as that role she played on the movie Panic. I'm going to check that out too, and I hope you can as well. But more importantly, check out what's coming for her, and that's going to be the next role of It's All of Me, Pittsfield, Massachusetts, at the Barrington Stage Company. Check it all out, barringtonstagecompany.org. Lastly, talk a little bit quickly about the things that are going on at FSHD Society. Check out local chapter meetings. They're all around you. Be a part of those. We really want you to, because, for instance, it's a great time to communicate. Early onset group is also available there, too. If you want to get in touch with that group, highly recommend it. It is something that I think is needed, and we've kind of looked past it. So check out when their next meetings are. When this show airs, I know we were looking to air it here in September, because this is when she's releasing the show and what's coming up. That was also within the walk and roll event. So I'm hoping that you know, you are being a part of that. That is coming up, if this is airing, like I believe it is, on the 13th here of September, that those walk and roll events are coming up on the 17th, and you're excited for those things. As well as the Hot Off the Press episode coming later this month. Always check those out. The Gen Z for FSHD, that next meeting is September 18th. A lot of good things coming. More walk and rolls throughout the month. Be a part of that if you can. There's a great events out there to just draw into the community. And that is really what's important to me, is this community. Meeting each one of you, as I have, either through this platform or when I was in Orlando, meeting some face-to-face. Continue to communicate with me. You know, send me some emails. There's guests you want to be on the show, if you want to be a guest on the show, or you just kind of want to, I don't know, let's just chat. We could do that too. So I'm always here for you guys. Thank you very much for being a part of this show and all the shows in the future. If you want to find more episodes out there, they are available through Spotify and other platforms that you find your podcast, as well as YouTube. Search the FSHD Society channel. Thanks all. We'll see you next time at the FSHD Society. Thank you to our sponsors, Perkin Elmer and Fulcrum, as well as Madison Ferris, for joining us today. Take care. Be well.